afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our quarterly State Emergency Response Commission meeting. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Brent Everett. I'm the Director of the Division of Environmental Response and Remediation, sitting in for Alan Matheson, Executive Director of DEQ. And we have John Whitesides sitting in for Commissioner Keith Squires, who I know Alan's out of town.
Yeah, we were originally scheduled to do this meeting together, and so the commissioner and I were scheduled to do it at the time.
And then hopefully we'll get that squared away so we can actually get here at the same time. So thanks to the advisory committee for meeting earlier today, and we'll continue on with the agenda outlined for this afternoon. And we do have someone on the phone, Neil, right?
Michelle Miller.
Michelle, welcome. First action item is approval of the December 6th, 2016 meeting minutes. And I've read them. So I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the December 6th, 2016 meeting minutes.
Second the motion. Is there any discussion to the motion in a second? Any corrections or additions?
No.
Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is that stereoscopic enough? Aye. The two of us. You position straight ahead of us, it probably sounded like a really rich stereo. Very good. The minutes are approved. And then we have a list of informational items that I believe most of these probably came out of the Circuit Advisory Committee meeting and probably had some discussion earlier today. And the first is that John Hart has been elected as the chair by the Circuit Advisory Committee, and we will approve that at the next meeting since we didn't get it on as an approval item for the agenda. Please, John, function in that capacity.
John's over here.
There you go. There's John. And we'll take care of that formal detail of approval by the CERC in the April meeting, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And did you elect a new vice chair?
Did.
All right, so.
That's John Buchanan.
Jim Buchanan.
Okay. Sorry.
Very good. And we'll take care of that too at the next meeting, I would assume.
Yes.
In terms of a formal approval by the two-person CERC. That makes it more special. And fixed site regulated industry representative. Neil, did you want to talk about that? Or John, do you want to talk about that today to the CERC?
Well, why don't I take care of it? Okay. Yeah. Do you have this? Is your one of your handouts?
I got one. Oh, second.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Cody, do you want Neil to take care of this?
Yes, thank you.
So you have a list here of members of the advisory committee in order of when their term expires. You can see that John Varanth, who represents the public, and Mark Illum, who represents fixed site industry, their terms expire this month. They had an opportunity to have another term, but they've decided not to do that, so we need to fill two slots. That was discussed during the advisory committee, and we discussed options for reaching out to LAPCs and other potentially interested groups, and they're going to get back to Chris or I with recommendations for consideration at our next meeting.
Okay. Very good. So please, if you know people, send them to the direction of the Circuit Advisory Committee. We would love to have those spots, at least some good nominees to work with for the next meeting, if we can. Anything else on that, Neil?
No.
Okay. Summary of the draft, LAPC CERC guidance.
We skip one there. Meeting telecommunication issues under administrative items.
Let me make sure I got the right agenda here. I have two agendas. They're exactly the same. Okay. Meeting telecommunication issues, please, let's talk about that.
So the problem is, in this building, trying to get some equipment that will allow people who are calling in to hear what's going on. We thought of bringing down the equipment from our second floor, which provides a variety of telecommunication options, but we can't move that equipment. It's plugged in up there, can't plug down here. So we got this system from DTS. And hopefully it's been working. Michelle, how's the quality of the sound in the last meeting?
It was good. Still a little faint on the back end, but I can still hear.
Good. So we got this microphone, and we got a couple of mobile microphones here and there around. So apparently one of them isn't working, but it's better than what we had last time. So that was the issue that we're trying to address.
Would it facilitate moving to a different room to have better telecommunications?
It's not the room, it's the equipment. We need at least a size room. So.
Well, I know the DEQ is looking at upgrading equipment in some of our conference rooms, and maybe that will take care of the problem for the future if we want to go back to using the conference room on the DEQ
yeah,
side.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Soliciting bids right now for conference room equipment upgrades. So I'm not sure what the time frame is for making some changes, but we'll certainly keep that in mind as we go forward.
Good. Thank you.
Anything else on that one?
No.
Okay. And now, Jim, I think you're up for a summary of the draft LEPC search guide.
We submitted a draft based on information we've obtained from 7 different states that are currently have a program similar to what we're looking at. We're going to incorporate the current LEPC handbook, which is in the process of being updated, is making part of it. We're going to add a facility side of it so that we can include how to better coordinate with our private sector partners. We'll put together I'll call it, for lack of a better word, a program, a textbook, and then as we make presentations based on the group that we'll be presenting to, we will pull out parts that we want to present. What we would present to, say, emergency managers might be different than what we would present to health departments. What we would present to elected officials would be different because we only have about a 15-minute window we can get with most of those folks. And so we would pull things out. We're also going to look at including what are the risk factors for an elected official if they choose not to support an LEPC or have that program within their jurisdiction. What that seems to get their attention when we talk about risk and lawsuits. So we're going to move through. We got a lot of good comments back, and so we'll be expanding that outline to include. I think we're going to keep it more in the line of bullet points with short sentences as opposed to a drawn-out document with a lot of reading. We also want to include links to various websites, so when we talk about a particular ordinance, particular rule, or some kind of information, it would be current. Because the minute we publish this and put it out, it's going to be outdated, we know that. So we'll put links in there that they can at least get basic information that would be up to date as of the time they clicked on it. Hopefully that whoever's putting it on the website will be correct. EPA out of Denver's offered some information they've been doing, so we're going to incorporate that in to what we're doing, and I've taken the philosophy a long time ago, steal from the best. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. I'll never get it done. So that's where we're at.
I don't want the best as us being on record now, okay? Info share.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion from the committee to add to that or other comments on that? I think this will be a useful tool. I like the LEPC, what it means as outlined here relative to look for and visit habits in the community and a new twist on being at LEPC. That got my attention. Questions, comments for the committee, Don?
No, just in. Several of us attended the Western CERC conference in February, and that was actually one of the key themes that people kept asking, you know, how do we energize our LEPCs, our CERCs, how do we engage our local officials? So it's good that, you know, they've taken the initiative already to go down that road. So,
what would be helpful if we actually held a CERC meeting in some of these other jurisdictions to bring more attention to what this body can do, and the CERC advisory committee maybe once a year we went to a different one of the 7 districts that you guys have identified and have the CERC meeting and CERC advisory committee meeting there. I don't know.
Yeah, we've done that in the past. We've done it as a part of the LEPC conference in the past, so that might be helpful, because the LEPC members are all right there, and so they can then go to a CERC meeting as part of their attendance.
And we used to also attend facilities and have tours.
That's right.
Had discussions on some of their emergency plans and procedures, and I think that heightens that partnership that I think you were focusing on.
I had an opportunity with the early spring flooding to meet with elected officials and emergency managers in the northern part of the state, and I don't have a clue what an LEPC is, do I understand it? And the answer came back from most elected officials when I asked what the CERC was. Oh, that's the group of people that go to the state EOC when they have an emergency. So I think there's a lot of information that we can provide, and I think by taking this group around or making it available somehow, will enhance it, because they don't know what we do. They don't hear we're doing this, we're talking about future projects. They don't know what's going on. It's just another one of those state organizations that meets somewhere, does something, and what do you do? I don't see anything bad. So I think if there was a way we could expand that or make them available to a call-in or whatever, I think would do a lot to remove some of those I don't know what you do type things.
Yeah, and change that to, hey, I understand your resources.
Yes.
Have access to
conferences. Yeah.
And want to bring things to your...
Are you having another LEPC conference?
So maybe we could ask the committee to kind of be thinking about maybe opportunities to, like, in addition to the LEPC conference, to maybe look at where we could have a CERC meeting maybe once a year outside of the, not necessarily away from the Wasatch Front, but to the north, to the south, or even in Cody's land. You can go down to Cody's land.
I'd love to have you. I'm always begging to get people down.
That'd be great.
We'd love to have you.
It's not the winter.
No. We can have the summer and bring four wheelers.
See, that's what, let me know when we can bring ours, right?
Hey, you do it at the right time, we'll do some Dutch oven chicken at the table.
I think that there is no more discussion on this item. Just make a plan. Well, very good. Thank you, Jim, for that report out. Appreciate that. DNDO?
We're going to skip that, sir.
We're going to skip that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hazmat scene cleanup.
Well, Cody, do you want to take the lead on that one?
I can. So if you'll recall, this is the last sort of meeting that we had some discussion on hazardous materials cleanup. The discussion that we had before was a question as to whether there was any sort of regulation, licensure, certification requirements. From that discussion, it was determined that in the state of Utah, there are not. There is some oversight that is provided through DEQ and so the health departments, depending on the area that you're in. And that was kind of what was established through that discussion. It was brought up again in this meeting, more of the direction leaning towards what can we do to create some of the regulation to lean more towards that, so that there is some regulation for hazardous materials cleanup. Some of the discussion, some of the things that I presented, I mean, using examples, my sister-in-law just had 3 months to go to college and take 2 certification tests to put finger polish on fingernails. But there's not a requirement or a licensure certification required for hazardous materials. Myself as a technician, hazardous materials technician, I have to have a state certification in order to contain the stuff on scene. But whoever comes and gets it does not have to have a certification or a licensure to remove it and transport it. The transportation industry as well, they're required to have licensure and certifications to transport. But once it spills out of those containers that are regulated, the person that removes it from scene is not.
Other than that, I believe they have to have it manifested to go to certain facilities, right?
Cleanup company, the tow truck company that comes and picks it up. Who knows who's requiring that? So basically, the discussion began to lean towards what would be necessary, what could we do to begin researching and look into creating legislation and some requirements. Some of the things that we discussed in CERC strategic plan currently, one of the items, and I don't know if you can read it, I don't have that paper, but Jim has it actually, read it from the CERC plan.
Response contractor certification, Title 252 of the Oklahoma legislation, has a certification program legislation fees are set forth in requirements for highway spill remediation, and businesses are put on a certified list. Spill types are categorized based on DOT classifications. A UDOT present on a committee would be helpful. That comes from your strategic plan as to what you want to look at. So
the discussion kind of focused around the potential risks, the risks of anybody being able to just come in and take charge of a cleanup company and not having any sort of regulation, any sort of requirement for legislation, or sorry, licensure certification that way. What ends up happening, one of the potential risks is this company picks it up, takes it to the dump, doesn't have the education and the requirements to take care of the dump, so if I don't want that, you can't leave that here, and it ends up on site over the night. There's a lot that goes into, as John can attest, there's a lot that goes into cleaning up chemical spills properly and safely for the environment and for the public. And so what we would like to recommend, or what we voted on as a cert, and an item that we would like you to consider, is approval of looking into possibly pursuing legislation and doing the research necessary to pursue that legislation to require a licensure or network certification for hazardous materials cleanup companies. Did I word that right, John?
And it'd be similar to this Oklahoma one, right?
Oklahoma, that's just one example.
That's just an example. It would
have one.
Pretty straightforward, though.
Basically, what we'd like your approval is to begin the research. Who are the partners we want to bring to the table to look at this? Transportation, fixed facility, cleanup companies. And we wanted to do it so you were aware of it, so you didn't hear about it. And go, I didn't know that type of a thing. And we may come back and say the recommendation is because of A, B, and C, we don't recommend doing it. We just want to be able to move forward and to begin looking. Is that something we want to consider?
So they may also be contacting companies that do this.
TRW.
Right.
Beacon,
yeah.
And players.
So since there would be contacts in saying that we work as an advisory committee for DEQ, it would be, what do you feel about this type of thing? Just so you'd be aware, there'd be those contacts out there that may come back and they may ask additional questions.
Okay, I appreciate that.
And this came about a couple instances we've had here in Utah where a tow company caught the insurance company and letting them be also the hazmat cleanup company and slight problems.
Yeah, we talked about that at the last meeting, mm-hmm. one down in your jurisdiction in New Granada. So, you know, if there's one, there's more than one. So. Mm-hmm. I think we should seriously consider looking at this as a possibility and maybe having that outreach initially. I don't want to speak for the executive director of the department. There's a lot that goes into getting legislation put in place, including finding the right sponsor and working closely with stakeholders. I'm a big proponent of stakeholder-generated legislation, but I think it would be appropriate to at least make the outreach to ask some of our stakeholders, is this a problem from your perspective? We know it is for certain things, but I mean, I would love to know what Lincoln thinks about it, what TRW thinks about it, and what some of the other LAPCs maybe think in their districts, if it's how big of a problem it is. Because it creates a bureaucracy, it does, and it's got to be funded somehow. Those are the things that are real world issues for us. But I think there's merit to at least exploring what it could look like. And I would be cautious about putting too much flesh on the skeleton quite yet, but at least asking around and saying, and maybe the first thing is we look at other states in addition to Oklahoma and say, what are other states doing to deal with this problem?
The Department of Public Safety's process, or I guess policy on legislation, is kind of this route to gather all the facts, to research it, and then to be able to present this is what we found, so that DPS can make an informed decision to say yes or no, we're going to, I guess, support this moving forward, and then to start looking for a sponsor in the legislature. So I think they're right along the lines of what they need to do in that research stage and gathering information.
So maybe we could ask the CERT Advisory Committee to begin looking at other state programs and maybe compile a list of best practices. And then it would be helpful to maybe pull together numbers of cases where this has fallen through the cracks, and it would have been appropriate to have something like this in place. So we can identify the problem, and then here are some potential solutions if we decide that it merits taking it statutorily. So
one discussion, part of the discussion was whether that research would be most appropriately accomplished through us as the CERT or through employees of PBS and the EQ being tasked with that.
Sure.
I don't know if we can make that recommendation.
Well, it always needs to be headed up by somebody that's an employee. It goes to that level of work and what needs to happen and the contacts and the ongoing nature and the fact that we're an advisory group that only meets once a quarter. And so I think it would be beneficial to have us do bring back from our perspective things we represent information, but I think it would be good to task someone from staff level to be the focal point of where that's collected, and then as it moves forward, you know, they're up to speed as to what was found and what's going on. I honestly suspect that this may be one of those areas that people will be surprised when they find out it isn't regulated. With as much regulation as is in place about various things, I almost bet the public would almost assume that people who do this kind of work and carry these kinds of things are all qualified and credentialed. And, you know, I suspect we're really doing a good thing by doing this, because I think the public probably figures they are.
Well, yeah, you think, but
And I say that because Cody mentioned it when we were talking earlier about what it takes to get your nails license, or what it takes to do any of these other kinds of services in the state. Here we're talking hazardous materials and disposal, and there's nothing.
Well, there is for disposal.
Disposal.
But they may not be aware of what the rules are and maybe doing things improperly.
Right.
That's a different issue, I think. Because I think the disposal regulations are pretty clear relative to hazardous waste.
If they take it to those places.
But there's actually a side issue to that, and that is if the facility refuses it, then they go dump it wherever, right? And so,
or like we discussed, some of these guys will come take a foot of dirt off the top of a diesel spill, whereas somebody that knows what they're doing is going to come in and take 40 cubic yards of dirt, because that's actually what we're affecting.
And sample it and confirm it's been cleaned up.
None of these fly-by-night. Well, they're not fly-by-night companies. That's just not what they do. Their job is other things. They don't do the sampling, and not to mention the health and safety risks associated with their employees who are not trained or certified in this. I don't know if that goes into other regulatory agencies and different things that way, but there's so many people and things and environment and everything affected by hazardous materials spill that aren't being regulated from A to B, or A to Z, as far as once it's spilled to where it's cleaned up or considered cleaned up, and then it's safe for the environment and the public. So,
you know, since I wasn't in the advisory committee meeting, there was probably some discussion on, because we do certifications in DEQ for a variety of things, underground storage tank, soil samplers, things like that. But the bulk of the population is located along the Wasatch Front or along the I-15, I-80, and I-70 corridors, right? What kind of effect would this have on rural Utah relative to a certified cleanup contractor, if that's what we're going to call them or whatever? And there isn't one. The cost for some companies is prohibitive to bring somebody to the Wasatch Front to deal with a spill in rural Utah. Are we facing the same, even though we have maybe a regulation that requires certification, are we creating not solving the problem because of the increased cost to the spiller? I mean, something to consider, and that's got to be factored into like the fiscal note that goes along with any statutory bill.
There may be a slight increased cost based simply on just the transportation from point A to point B. They've got to get it from their yard to wherever they are along Wasatch Front. they drive 100 more miles to get it to wherever they are on in rural Utah. I personally don't like that there's that distinction, just because the threat is just as real there as it is here.
I agree.
But I feel like that it would create that extra burden, but at the same time, I think it's necessary as well. And I think that would help. That would lend helping towards the transportation of it, and help even more, making it even more safe to the original transportation of the items themselves, and them taking the extra precautions not to spill because of that. It just adds an extra incentive to make sure that you don't tip your truck over, I guess, if that makes sense. I honestly don't know how to speak towards that. I don't know that it would be an extreme, that much more of a cost.
One of the issues you have is a lot of the landfills can't take TPH type soils, so they all do have to come back this way for disposal. There's an ECDC out in East Carbon, but most of we do a lot of it on the I-70 Sunmount area down south, and we bring a majority of that back up here because the cost to dispose of it up here is a lot cheaper than some of the landfills down there that they charge absorbent price to get rid of a ton of, DRO or GRO type soils. But
it's fortuitous we've got John as now our chair who can help with this whole thing.
But one of the things I forgot to bring up was a lot of the states, like you're saying, there's no real permitting for these response companies, but like State of Nevada requires a certified environmental manager to oversee the spill cleanup, and the certified environmental manager ensures that the response company does the cleanup proper to the state and federal regs. And then, California, they use what's called a registered environmental. I mean, every state has their own little acronym, but as we're talking, there's no real permitting. It's basically insurance, EPA identification number, and in certain states, like California Department of Toxic Substance Control, they permit one in. California Highway Patrol permits another. And so it's just that, every state has their own little set of rules.
Well, I think there's merit to looking to see what other states are doing and then kind of looking to see if there's a place for developing something here. I'm always sensitive to additional bureaucracy, but I'm also charged with protecting public health and the environment. And so I think we need to look at it, and I think we need to make a determination as to what's best for Utah. So, now the question that I think I heard was from Mr. Charman here, but he doesn't want to do this himself.
Well, I just don't think I can.
No, I think it probably ought to be researched by the agencies, and then that information brought back to the CERC Advisory Committee for digestion and discussion, and then brought again before the CERC to say, here's what we found. And I think we can work at both directions, through the CERC and then also directly through the agency management structure to kind of just determine what's out there and what looks best for us.
And you made an excellent point, Mr. Everett, for the tape, that it really is an extension backwards of the fact that you regulate where the waste goes. It makes sense to show care and caution in how that waste is accumulated and transported. And really, that's what this would do. It's really an extension of, we know we've got regulated waste that has to get disposed of properly. We're simply saying we haven't had enough safety control on the way that it gets to the end product, end point. And so, yeah, I think you're on the right track.
Okay. Well, I think we probably need to take this back within our own structures and decide, make staff assignments that can then feed into the supervisor committee. Not anything we can vote on to say we're going to pursue this path definitively, but I think the council has been received and the recommendation acknowledged. And I think, at least from the DEQ perspective, I think we need to look into what other states do, other DEQs, what even other divisions within our department would maybe consider as appropriate types of certifications and or requirements for the handling of spills. I mean, if we look closely at what we can do in Utah, I mean, we looked several years ago at pipeline spills, and and we don't regulate those, unfortunately. We do once they potentially impact surface and or groundwater, but, you know, in a pipeline, and this state is riddled with pipelines, as this body knows, we have very little authority as a state because it's mostly federally regulated. And so, you know, I think we have an uphill climb, but I think we ought to at least explore it because I see merit, particularly in rural Utah, where some of these things, like, I think you mentioned the last meeting, you know, somebody's brother-in-law was called out to just dig this up and haul it away. There's no guarantee that they know what they're doing or even handling it appropriately. And there's an OSHA consideration as well, which we don't also regulate, but certainly are cognizant of because that's health and safety of the employee. So I think it bears looking at in terms of what are some of the best practices, what do other states do, what other divisions contemplate, and the different place in EPS and or us in creating some kind of a structure to better manage this. So I say we start looking at it.
Not to much further continue the discussion itself, just one other standpoint to look from is that of public safety. The sheriff's office is tasked with the public safety of the people in the community themselves, and those of us, whether, you know, if it's on a county road or even if it's on a high state highway, you have highway patrol, the relinquishment of that scene to somebody that's licensed and regulated versus somebody that we have no idea who they are. Again, that relinquishment also comes back to us. That responsibility comes back to us. If we say, no, you cannot clean this up, you are not, based on what, based on how, based on, all of a sudden I just bought that cleaner. My county just bought that. So now I just, you know, they're going to come back and say, hey, I can clean that up because there's nothing that says that I can't. It's not going to be done safely, but I could have done it. And you told me I couldn't. And that guy made $75,000 doing it. You owe me $75,000. That's just one. That's one more level of consideration for those on the public safety scene that we're required to relinquish that scene safely, and we don't have at this point in time any guidance to do that. If that makes sense, or any confidence in the decision that we're going to make at that point. Just something else.
No, those are all good points, Cody. And I appreciate the thought and the discussion that occurred prior to this, but giving us an opportunity to kind of talk through it too as a surgeon.
Okay.
And so I think I'll take it back internally with DEQ, and I think we'll start looking at least internally what's existing, what would the perfect solution look like, and then let's look at other states and see what we come back with, and maybe the DEQ staff can propose some of the findings that we look at in terms of other states and best practices and things like that at maybe the next CERT advisory committee meeting. So, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, great. You know, where it's not our technical area per se, we can support that if, you know, like Neil or Chris needs us to research something. We're
happy to do that. And then on the UDOC side, you might consider helping UDOC as well. It's happening with UDOC right now with higher control, seeing control. So that's really the buy-in that you guys have as well on that.
It's a good suggestion on UDOT. I could see them being a strong proponent for having some assurance that their roads are and their right-of-ways are protected because the contractors know what they're doing and have some level of confidence in their certification.
Right.
Another agency to think about. I appreciate that. Thanks to the advisory committee for talking through that and for bringing it to the CERT's attention. Anybody else have any comments on that or want to give further direction to John and I? Because we're open for direction today. Yeah,
it's been one of those kind of days.
I'll take whatever you got. Bring it on. Okay. Risk planning and chemical emergency preparedness. This is assigned to the group to discuss. So,
somebody from EPA want to handle that? Brad, you want to?
For the Aristotech issue, is that correct?
Yes, for the RMP postponement.
Oh, the RMP, okay.
RMP.
So as far as that goes, Administrator Pruitt had issued, as of last week, the extension or postponement of the implementing the RMP rule. Right now, it's 90 days. Right now, looking at June 19th before a final decision would be made. And this, I guess, and my colleague, Rebecca Broussard, is definitely the expert on R&P rule, and that was, I guess this is pretty common with changes in administration that Congress has some time to kind of look at anything in the pipeline just to make sure it fits their, I guess, agenda with the administration and that type of thing. So they'll be looking at that and see what happens. At least for right now, anything under the R&P rule that was previously implemented would still continue to be so. It would just be anything new is put on hold, and then we'll find out in 90 days before we go from there.
So do you recall what RMP is, and would you like a little background on what that is?
Yes, refresh my memory.
Okay, so RMP is facilities to handle more a certain volume of toxic or flammable substances have to prepare a worst-case scenario plan and submit that to EPA and submit it to the LAPC as well and say, this is what we have, and if there's a worst case, this is how we're going to take care of the problem. And the new regulations basically said some of that information is going to be available to the public as well. Is that right, basically?
Yeah, it's a real big push to involve the LAPC and just make sure there's kind of a connection there, and then the facility making sure that, okay, if we had an incident, why? It's really dialing back to how they can fix things.
So and is it classified based on the size of the facility, or is it just anything that handles certain types of materials?
The amount, there's a certain list of chemicals, quantities of a list of chemicals.
Okay.
And then so a bunch of industry groups came to EPA and said, we're really concerned with security issues, that you're providing a list of terrorist targets out there for to be used by those. We don't want it to have it. And so they're concerned about
concern relative to tier two.
That's right. So that's why it's postponed. So there's a bunch of regulations as well besides that are being postponed. The vapor intrusion rule that's under the hazardous CERCLA is also being postponed as well.
That's for the listing of sites, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Under
well, I think everything's put on hold right now through the turnover of administration.
Right.
So
that's basically it.
Okay. So the RMP stands for Risk Management Plan. The facilities have to develop by statute, and this
that's
is
right.
a rule that directs them to have certain components of that, including a public component.
A public component, that's right.
So June 19th, you said, was the
yeah, that's when we'll at least find out where we go from there.
Okay. Which could be extended or pulled back or or just
extended.
As with anything, we'll wait till June 18th and see if we can.
There's actually some legislation that's been introduced in the House to get rid of the RMP program altogether.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Other items? And there's all kinds of code words here. UP3 participation in the CERC.
That's Utah Public Private Partnership.
Okay. So that three should be up, or that should be up.
So, CERC was, Chris was investigating the possibility of getting this Utah Public Private Partnership more involved in the CERC Advisory Committee. Matt Beaudry from Emergency Management leads this group. They work together in preparing for emergencies and make sure that the industries are aware of what they can do to prepare, and work with our public groups, our governmental groups, to make sure everybody's working together. That's basically what that partnership's about. So Chris was thinking it might be helpful to get somebody from that partnership, either somebody from DEM that represents that, like Matt Beaudry, or somebody from the Utah Manufacturers Association who is actively involved in this partnership, to get more involved in the CERC Advisory Committee. That was his thought.
Could one of those empty chairs used to maybe integrate with the UP3?
Exactly right. That's what we were talking about in the advisory committee, of trying to do that together.
Okay. And if we did something like that, then that brings the nexus pretty close to a partnership with UP, Utah Public Private Partnership.
That's right.
Okay.
We just say UP3 for sure.
Okay. I'll remember
some
that.
Some people say UP3 because of dots in between the, acronyms in government. Yeah, but just adding on to what Neil said, this group's specific focus is just the private sector, and so they've already made those relationships with Rocky Mountain Power, Questar Gas, with the refineries up in North Salt Lake, and then they hold what are called PSPCs, Private Sector Preparedness Councils. Got one in Salt Lake, they've got one up north, they've got a couple others, I think they might even have one in the Uinta Basin, but it basically brings, once a month, they bring these private sector groups together, and you know, they'll talk about hazardous materials, or they'll talk about active shooters, and they'll talk about cybersecurity, just any one of these things that the businesses can do to prepare themselves for any hazards. And so with having those connections already made, maybe they may be able to get, you know, that broader range group to be involved and participate here with us.
And I also maybe see we can tie into that resource in the LABC sort of draft outline in terms of the
They're going to be included.
Okay, excellent. Very good. We're kind of on full circle on that. Okay. The 2017 Western Search Summary, you were going to report out on that, John?
Yeah, so just some of the things we've already talked about already, just some of the key things that they talked about as far as challenges are some of the same that we have here. A lot of them were asking about best practices for certs, LAPCs, which we really have already talked about. You know, some of their best practices were actually, you know, taking the cert on the road, being there with the LAPCs, and then just really the overall kind of theme was the CERC's main priority, or I guess main job, is to support those LAPC efforts rather than be regulatory or trying to push programs down, but instead seeing from what programs are best used from the ground up and support those. So the EPA has done a good job of having capturing all those best practices from the Western states and putting them on a website. So we had not put that out to the group yet, so we'll put that out after this meeting, and they can go and make those at their pleasure.
Excellent. And thanks to the EPA for hosting that and bringing everybody together so we could have those discussions about best practices and what other states are doing. It's helpful to, we want to recreate the wheel, you know, and it's good to hear what our colleagues are doing in other parts of the region and other nearby regions.
And the next one, because we rotate through, so the next one will be Region 10, which is based out of Seattle, so Seattle-Portland area. The intent, budget dependent, I guess, would be to rotate that every year, so I'll be annual.
Okay, excellent. Melissa, you want to talk about Executive Order 13650, quarterly update meeting or whatever?
Executive Order 13650 is now called the Chemical Safety and Security Call. This changed with the new administration, apparently that's typical. The last call was on March 7th. we went through a debrief of the Western Region CERC Conference that Jonna just talked about. They discussed some upcoming chemical industry workshops that are going to be in North Dakota, LAPC workshops in South Dakota. There is a two-day cameo training in North Dakota in May, and there's an online LAPC facility tabletop training available. If anybody's interested in that, they have the link provided, and I can give that to anybody who wants it. DHS has a new Chief of Regulatory Compliance in Region 8, that's Jim Williams, and then we did a state round Robin, and basically all the states just went through how the reporting year 2000 tier 2 submissions went. The states that were involved was Colorado, Montana, North Dakota, and Utah. And it seemed that everybody had a pretty successful tier 2 submission process this year. Everything went pretty smoothly. Montana recently inherited the E-Plan program, so they're working on that and they like it so far, but I think based on what we've come up with our four, we're going to go in this direction for a while. As far as our Tier 2 submissions went, we're still getting calls for help with the portal and the Tier 2 submit software that EPA puts out every year, but it does seem like these are slowing down a bit compared to last year. I think as people use the portal once or twice, they feel more comfortable navigating it. It's just an issue of getting familiar with what they're doing. And we do have a tier two wish list based on suggestions I've heard or kind of come up with myself that seem to be a problem for users that we're going to be working on throughout the rest of this year and hopefully get pushed out by next reporting year.
I was going to ask what the nature of the calls. Are we kind of tracking to see what the most of the inquiries are? And
yeah.
Can we make some adjustments on our end to make it easier for them to upload their data?
Yeah, and it seems like we had a tier two meeting a couple months back. It seems like most of these updates are going to be pretty easy to make on the portal. A lot of them aren't really huge issues. It's just mostly people. I think people mainly when they get on there, they're afraid that if they click the wrong button, they're going to screw up their submission or something. So it's just a matter of getting more familiar with it.
I wonder if there's any benefit to maybe doing a one-page tutorial to put on the website that, you know, if you have questions about Tier 2 uplink, here's a...
Yeah, some videos,
there
in fact.
There are some tutorials on our website.
Yeah. Yeah.
That people can go through with.
We've got a manual that they could download as a PDF, but there's also four different instructional videos that we're thinking of maybe doing a voiceover in the future. But we're also in the process of converting it from the schema changes and going from a T2S format to an XML format. So there's just some computer stuff that, as we make the upgrades and changes, it'll become more user-friendly, we hope. So it's a work in progress.
Well, keep us posted, because I know that's important data for the LABCs that have maybe consolidated in one place. We want to make it easy for folks to report it so that we can consolidate it.
Well, it's also a searchable database, and so the public could have access to it and search by, they can't download an entire county, but they can search by chemical or facility or city or county or whatever, and so that it's a pretty robust search engine that could help LEPCs out as well.
We're good. Anything else on that, Melissa?
Sure.
Neil, are you going to talk about the, since Chris isn't here, the upcoming DEQ emergency response workshop on April 4th?
Right. I think everybody that's in this meeting with those, except those who already know, we're here in the advisory committee. So during the advisory committee, we pass out a copy of the agenda. It's over there by Duane now. And discuss the purpose of this annual meeting. And we talked about who attends and why we discuss what we discuss and invite everybody to attend. So it was just an introduction, and y'all come.
Yes, I'm sure you're all familiar with how this started. This started out as a partnership with our local health departments to talk about emergency response and kind of help clear the gray areas between responsibilities and authorities. And it's become a great opportunity to have conversations and reviewing past events, lessons learned, and we've slowly introduced other partners to attend. EPA has been great to come. Present as well as be present, and other federal land managers. And we value this emergency response symposium, and so we encourage you to come. You're always welcome to attend, and we'll have many of the local health department representatives there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, April 4th, is there a need to register for that like we did last year?
There is, so I told them just to shoot me or Chris an email. Get registered.
And we'll get you the link to register.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Any other items that the CERC Advisory Committee would like to bring up as part of our CERC meeting discussion this afternoon?
I know I wanted to jump in real quick just to piggyback off what Melissa said with the chemical call, too, that the training's going on in North Dakota and South Dakota, where as EPA we're putting those on, so there's like LEPC 101 or training specific for facilities, so that's something if Utah is interested in, we would gladly try to work with you guys to see if that's something we can either do or assist with or anything like that, especially with Jim's work on the any work plans or things like that. We're gladly willing and able to assist you as we can.
That's a great resource. I think we might just take you up on that in the future.
I can't promise it'll be me per se, but depending on the timing of everything, but there's a group of us that would our expertise would be able to help.
Very good. That's remember that, and we maybe can plan something, an outreach that is different than what we normally would do in terms of our OPC conference. And maybe we could tie it into that too, as well as a component of EPA's presence there. So thank you for that. Others? I mean, anybody else have anything they want to bring up for the CERC's consideration today? I can extend this meeting to 2:30 because there's another meeting I'm supposed to be at, and I don't want to go.
Well, there's more food over there, so.
Yeah, well, that's pretty shallow of me to end the meeting just like me. Right? So. Next meeting date and time is scheduled for June 21st. I don't think that's correct, is it? 20th. I thought it was the 20th.
June 20th.
Yeah, it should be June 20th. I don't know if your agenda's got it. I got this from Chris Martin. We got it from you guys. So June 20th, 1 p.m., and the CERC advisory will meet that morning. I think you guys start at 10.
10:30.
9:30. 10:30. And we'll continue to meet here in the Mazov. But we'll kind of track the telecommunications issue and see if there's any need to change rooms at all. Motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to be adjourned.
Seconded and so moved. Thank you, everybody, for being here.